This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Social media can embrace you or engulf you. For those confronting cancer, it's a resource, a burden, or for some, an irrelevancy. They decide.
My name is Nicole. I'm calling from Seattle. I credit social media with leading me to the effective treatment for my cancer. I was diagnosed with stage 4 appendix cancer, which is a very rare cancer. You know, the prognosis is usually quite poor, but I was able to find a Facebook group specifically for appendix cancer. And talking to the patients on that group led me to a specialist in Baltimore. It's helped me cope enormously because we can talk about what it's like to have lost so many organs, to have our lives change so much, and to survive or not to survive as we lose people pretty regularly on the board, which is very hard.
Hi, my mom has jumped from 1B to stage 3 in about a month. She has pretty much had a social media blackout for everybody. I guess what's tough is that, you know, I can't really tell a lot of people. I can't really deal with it in that way. But at the same time, I mean, personally, I don't know what telling a whole group of people online is really going to do for her. I mean, they're not doctors. They can't help her. They can't fix her, you know. I'd rather remain anonymous, to be honest. Like I said before, my mom doesn't want anybody to really know.
So social media can be a resource and a solace, or an intrusion and a snoop. It also can be a crucible for public action. 1 year ago, Amy Hardy of Fredericksburg, Virginia, was the mother of a dying 7-year-old boy.
Josh's condition was getting more critical by the day, and we heard our medical team say that if he didn't get the medicine that Chimerix had, things weren't going to go well for him.
Josh had endured 4 bouts of cancer, heart failure, and a bone marrow transplant. But the transplant had caused a deadly infection. There was a drug still in clinical trials that could save him, but they couldn't get it.
I just kind of put that plea out on Facebook.
What was the plea?
Facebook post, March 6, 2014. Please help us save our son. Share this post if you believe a child's life is more important than money. The situation is this. Our son, who recently had a bone marrow transplant, has developed adenovirus. There is a drug called brincidofovir that has been proven to treat the adenovirus effectively. Our doctor at St. Jude told us they ran the study for the drug company, and he knows it will work. However, the drug company has refused to release the drug for compassionate care because they are trying to take it to market. Basically, they are not going to save a child's life for money.
When we got involved, there were 3,000 hits on social media.
Richard Plotkin was a retired trial lawyer who'd seen his grandson suffer from cancer. His family launched the Max Cure Foundation to help similar children. He offered to help Josh by publicizing his case.
My small foundation alone had 1.1 million hits in 4 or 5 days on Facebook and 400,000 on Twitter. This story reached Brazil, Germany, France, England, and the Middle East. I was interviewed by a German television station because of this. Ken Mock told me that he received from friends emails from the Middle East asking him how he was.
Kenneth Mock was the CEO of Chimerix, a small drug company with about 55 employees and one drug, its first drug, brincidofovir, still in clinical trials. Chimerix had previously provided it to over 400 critically ill people, either individually or under a large government program. But that program ended in 2012. Kenneth Mock.
And the decision was made to focus the human and financial resources of the company on seeking formal FDA approval for brincidofovir.
Requests continued to pour in, and all were denied. It was when Josh Hardy's request was denied a second time that the family turned to Facebook to make that crucial plea. The next day, Chimerix was swamped by a social media deluge.
It was an extraordinarily rapid response. There were many tweets all the way from very nice pleas, it would be the ethical thing to do, to as violent and demonizing as one can imagine.
Did you suspect that this might happen? Had it happened before?
Social media had been used before by families seeking access to an experimental medicine. It had never been used this intensely, in part because the family members were in contact with several people who were extraordinarily social media savvy.
Among them, Richard Plotkin, that trial lawyer turned activist, who understood that addressing a crisis like this requires more than a Facebook page and a Twitter feed.
You need a face, because I knew through our sources that I might be able to get them on CNN, Fox and Friends, or Fox News Channel. And the face that was produced was of Amy Hardy, Josh's mother.
What is the right face?
The right face is of a mother who's desperately pleading to save the life of her child.
It was very nerve-wracking. First of all, your son is sick. You are in the ICU. They're telling you how critical he is, and you need to leave to go be on television. And so a large part of me didn't want to do it.
You were afraid he might not be alive?
I don't even want you to say that out loud.
I'm sorry.
My husband talked to me. He's like, we've got to do this. They're giving you the opportunity to state your case. You have to go. So I did. I can remember waiting to go on Fox and Friends. I felt like my chest was going to explode. My heart was going to come through my chest right there. And I could hear the show going on in my ear. And I knew after the next commercial break, I was going to be on television. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do. But the song that they led into commercial break was You Gotta Have Faith by George Michael.
Yes, I gotta have faith.
And I was like, that must be a God wink. I'm going to settle down right now. I can do this. I can do this. And it was actually a miracle that I cry at everything. I can't even watch a Hallmark commercial without crying. So for me to be on national television and plead for my son's life was nothing short of a miracle.
Why will the drug company not give him, as a compassionate use, this drug that he needs to survive?
They've definitely given excuses, but nothing is acceptable to us. This is our child's life, and we just feel compelled to just keep asking for it and begging for it, because if he does not get it, he is going to die.
That was just the beginning.
Tonight, a local community is fighting for Josh Hardy.
He's a 7-year-old boy.
Hardy's turned to Facebook, convincing tens of thousands of Americans to lobby the drug maker and even the White House for compassion.
Now, I know you think, all of us think, why can't they just give this little boy this drug?
I asked Richard Plotkin, did you consider the position of Kenneth Mock and Chimerics? You know, the ethics of saying yes to one patient and no to hundreds of others?
My goal was to get Josh Hardy the drug. If, in fact, the boy Josh died, I would have done everything in my power to destroy the company and Mr. Mock.
As Plotkin prepared for his interview on Fox News, he decided that Kenneth Mock was the problem, so he'd make him the villain. And he had an eager ally in Fox interviewer Peter Johnson Jr.
I wrote to Mr. Mock last night, and I told him that, unfortunately, this little boy made a turn for the worse, and as you point out, he may not live out the week. I did not get a response whether that, in fact, had changed his mind.
All I can tell you is that he is adamant, and as a result, it appears the final plea is to the board of directors, to Chimerics, who I'd like to make that plea right now, and I'll steal a page out of the playbook of Matthew McConaughey in the movie Time to Kill. I asked the board to close your eyes, and as you close your eyes, assume there's a little boy lying in a hospital bed who says to his father, Daddy, am I gonna die? And if I'm gonna die, who will take care of me in heaven? And then I want you to assume that this little boy is your child or your grandchild. And members of the board of directors, I have no doubt how you would respond to that.
Richard Plotkin, thank you for being a patriot.
Okay, so let's replay that reporter's rhetorical question.
All of us think, why can't they just give this little boy this drug?
This drug has the potential to be the first broad-spectrum antiviral against what are called double-stranded DNA viruses.
Kenneth Mock.
We've all heard of them. We just don't call them dsDNA viruses. They're cytomegalovirus, herpes viruses, human papillomavirus, smallpox, and adenovirus, which causes the common cold. But in immunocompromised people, it can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So those viruses are rampant throughout the global population. If you said yes to Josh, how could you say no to anybody else who came in with a life-threatening adenovirus infection? How could you say no to patients with a life-threatening cytomegalovirus infection? You might swamp the company with requests for compassionate use and not be able to complete your clinical trials necessary for approval of the drug.
It cost $50,000 to provide compassionate use of the drug to each patient, not to mention vast amounts of time and attention. Remember, Chimerix only had about 55 employees. Moreover, Mock had served 10 years on the board of a biotech industry group that had drafted a set of principles he firmly embraced.
The first is if you're going to provide access to an experimental medicine, it must be done equitably, making sure that nobody is chosen for a particular parameter, be it friendship, money, politics, or social media. The second point is that nothing you do in providing expanded access should delay your program for approval of the drug by the FDA, because that does influence the near-term patients versus the future patients. And while they may be hypothetical future patients now, they are real future patients when their time comes.
A little background on Kenneth Mock. 25 years ago, he founded the first company to develop cord blood stem cells, since used to treat over 10,000 people. Before that, he ran a company that worked on small molecular therapies for cardiovascular aging and diabetes. So he's been around the cutting-edge treatment block, so to speak. But within a week of the Hardy's first Facebook plea, he did get Josh that drug.
Josh Hardy has a message for all the people who supported the social media campaign that helped save his life.
I appreciate your help and I'm good.
So how did Kenneth Mock square that circle?
Starting on Monday morning, March 10th, literally just 3 days or so after the social media event began, Chimerix and the Food and Drug Administration began conversations which led to the creation of a new phase 3 clinical trial that would allow the company not only to provide brincidofovir to Josh Hardy, but also to many other patients in need and to collect data that could be used in support of the ultimate application to the FDA for approval.
The new trial is focused on adenovirus, Josh's virus, which hadn't been tested before. Of course, once the drug had hit the market, doctors could have prescribed it for adenovirus anyway. But, says Mock, you wouldn't have had good data on how well it worked. Now you will. But did it slow its path to market?
I don't believe it did. Under a different scenario, it might have. We were able to get him the drug in a scenario which I think was to the benefit of Josh, to the benefit of Chimerix, and to the benefit of future patients. So I absolutely believe that the solution that was reached created a win-win for everybody involved.
Richard Plotkin was delighted by the solution, and also by Mock.
Let me tell you, it would be a privilege for me, anything I would do with that man. I think what he did here was outstanding, and the fact that he was able to come up with the idea to start that clinical trial was brilliant, and the fact that he was let go is outrageous in my mind.
Yep, Mock was fired. That doesn't worry him. But the treatment of the issue across the media does.
The tenor from the beginning was, how could you not make this drug available? There was never a sense in the media coverage of the dilemma or ethical debate that exists. Josh Hardy had a very positive response to brincidofovir, and everybody looked at this and said, it's magnificent. The child got the drug. He survived. But what might have happened to the development program if Josh Hardy had an equally rapid and negative response? Is it possible that that might have slowed down the development pathway for brincidofovir by a week or a month or 2 months or a year? And if that had happened, would not the patients who might have received the drug in the future during that month or 2 months or year themselves possibly have died?
Kenneth Mock co-wrote a paper with noted bioethicist Arthur Kaplan last August called Rescue Me, The Challenge of Compassionate Use in the Social Media Era. It said that the Hardy case illustrates the power of social media to influence healthcare interventions and also the roadblocks to those in desperate need of them. And there needs to be a new system to resolve the log jams and funding issues, a review board perhaps, so decisions are not forced by tweets and talk show hosts, reporters and politicians. They said that there's a moral tension that often pits the few against the many. Meanwhile, however, Josh is doing very well.